And welcome to this week's edition of An Organic Conversation, a show about food, ecology, flavor, stories from the land, recipes, interconnectedness, relationships, and life itself. We are your hosts, Helge Hellberg.
Mark Mulcahy.
And we're excited about our show today as we are diving into the world of flavor. What is flavor? How is it expressed and conceived? And what is our true experience with it? The language of flavor, with some outstanding guests, all that and more today on An Organic Conversation.
Yes, yes, yes. The language of flavor. I've been speaking this language for so many years. It started when we used to get up in the pre-dawn hours to go to the produce market. And I would talk to the old Italians and they'd say, "How's that peach?" And I'd say, "Oh, it's great. It's really sweet." And they would say, "No, it's not just sweet. Tell me about it." And that started this whole thing with me. And then I would go back to my crew at the store and they would be at 7 o'clock in the morning wondering, why is this guy bothering me about the flavor of an apple or a peach? And so this just kind of transferred all over the country to school kids, to audiences I spoke with. And it took sweet, and they would get things like syrupy or honeyish or things like that. And it really just created a whole different conversation, which today we're going to talk about, the language of flavor.
Yes, the world of flavor and the language of flavor today on An Organic Conversation. And what a perfect moment to welcome our newest addition to the Organic Conversation team, Chef Sita Rani Bryan. Sita, you have been part of the show with your holistic bite at the bottom of the hour for a few weeks now, but we couldn't resist the recipes and dishes you keep bringing to the show for us. So, of course, and your wealth of knowledge in food and nutrition, we are so glad you accepted our invitation to become a co-host of the show. Great, great, great to have you.
Oh, thank you so much, Helge and Mark. It's such an honor. I love being here. And you're right, it is a perfect show because my life is all about the language of flavor too. Really, it's about getting people to invite this dialogue into their life so they have more ways to express their love of food, because I'm always looking for more ways to express my love of food.
And Mark is so right when the conversation ends at, "Oh, it's sweet." There's not really that much more to talk about, but sweet has thousands of different parts to it. And what kind of sweet and how does it linger in your mouth? And all that will change your relationship to your food. Mm-hmm.
And today we've got a whole lineup of flavor pros that we get to talk to. But first, we get to hear the green headlines from Jen Lloyd.
Thank you, Mark. The tiny South Pacific Islands of Tokelau, a territory of New Zealand, is going to be powered by entirely sustainable means with sunlight and coconut oil, two things the island has plenty of in just 1 year. Now, the islands run mostly on fossil fuels imported from New Zealand, but by this time next year, the islands will be completely self-sustaining off the grid using 93% solar installations and, for the remainder of their energy use, coconut oil. The rising ocean levels are in effect sinking the 16-foot elevation islands below sea level, so while the rest of the world is not acting quickly enough to greenhouse gas challenges and climate change, this very small country in the Pacific Ocean wants to be the vehicle project and a message to the whole world to walk the talk. In Lumbini, Nepal, the World Wildlife Fund and the Lumbini Development Trust have celebrated the planting of 108,000 tree saplings in the sacred garden of Lumbini, the holy birthplace of Lord Buddha. Over the next 10 years, the plan is to plant 1 million trees in the Lumbini UNESCO World Heritage Site. This initiative is part of the WWF's global efforts to work with faith groups to further the cause of nature conservation. This partnership is aimed at promoting responsible tourism and environmental practices at this sacred site. And the United States could soon lead the world in ending overfishing and managing the oceans sustainably. Through the introduction of new legislation, 2011 marks the year that could ensure that all fish sold by a U.S. commercial fisherman be managed with catch limits. Fisheries management is one area of environmental policy where other countries are looking to the U.S. for leadership. Buying domestic fish has the added benefits of reducing carbon emissions from transportation, increasing the chance that you'll get a fresh product, and keeping dollars flowing into the pockets of domestic fishermen. And those are the green headlines. Back to you, Helge.
Thanks, Jen Lloyd. Thanks for the green headlines. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Bryan.
And we'll take a quick break, but stay tuned for our first interview about the language of flavor with our guests today here in the studio, Paul Piscopo and Alain Grimaud. chef and sous chef at Trace, an outstanding new restaurant at the W Hotel in San Francisco, only here on An Organic Conversation. More on that when we come back. Stay tuned. Just watching as the world goes past. We are back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Bryant.
And today's show is about the language of flavor. We experience this world through our senses. One of them is taste and one of them is smell. Both lead us to the world of flavor, a world so rich and complex and subtle that it is basically endless. Everyone remembers that perfect hot dog at the ballpark or the perfect soup cooked by your mom when you were sick or a great romantic dinner where every dish was as sensual as the night that followed. So what's our true experience with flavor every day? Are we paying attention to it? How is flavor influenced by our state of mind and outside circumstances? Which recipes, which pieces of produce, what meats go together best? We're exploring the language of flavor today on An Organic Conversation, and with us in the studio are two absolute experts on it, Chef Paul Piscopo and sous chef Alain Grimont from Trace, a fantastic new restaurant at the W Hotel, of all places, in San Francisco, for a good reason. Paul and Alain, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's unusual to find a restaurant concept at a hotel, and then Mark and I go there with Sita and experience really one of the best foods you can experience at a hotel corporation. It's an unusual place to find that level of food. We want to dive into that story, but first, where did you find your passion, Paul, for food? How did that start in your life?
It started with I enjoyed work, and of course, the restaurant business is
a lot of work.
A lot of hard work. So it was a great fit. Love to work with my hands. That's kind of the way I learn. It's kind of the way, if I'm not in the kitchen cooking with food, I'm doing something. I shape surfboards for myself. So everything has to do with a little hand and brain connection.
What was the spark that where you actually decided to become a chef? What was this? How were you introduced to food?
I was lucky enough that we had a chef that was used to work in New York City, and he moved up to the suburbs to raise a family. And I was lucky enough to just kind of wander in the back door, and he let me work for a little while. And I saw, I'd worked in a few restaurants, you know, it was all pretty mainstream food. And he had a whole lot of different ingredients in his arsenal and a whole lot of different techniques. And it immediately just lit a spark that there's differences and there's better people to work with. And it just never stopped. Each day he would always have something different or show me something new. So it was an easy one. It was definitely an addiction.
Alain, how was it for you? What sparked that food bug?
I grew up with my mother, Melissa, she was actually born in Colombia, but she grew up in New York City, and she cooked just any type of food that you wanted. I mean, she can cook Latin food, she can cook Asian. I mean, she just had a knack for cooking. She still does, obviously. So I always grew up just eating really, really good food. I mean, the food I would get at home would be better than what I'd eat at restaurants. More than half the time. So to go to college, I went to college, it started in San Francisco. I definitely, started, she gave me some recipes of some dishes that I liked. Hers that were pretty easy, and I'd make them and, date over and cook for them. I think it works even better than going out to eat, but it's more impressive. I just kind of, had a knack for making some of those dishes. And at one point in my life, I was actually a salesman of electronics. I just wasn't necessarily that. I was doing well with that, but I wasn't happy doing that. It just, selling wasn't necessarily for me. And actually my wife was the one who kind of got me a little tour of the Culinary Academy in San Francisco. And I went and I kind of just got really excited and I
she
never
got
looked
you
back.
A tour. I heard that the story is that she actually sent in an application without you
yeah,
knowing.
Without me knowing. And I think I came home from work one day and she's like, oh, by the way, tomorrow you're going to go at 8 a.m. to the CCA. And
that's one way to guarantee you'll have food at the dinner table.
And once you get there, I said, they're pretty good about getting you to sign up. So I never looked back and that's it.
That's great. We are exploring the language of flavor and the world of flavor today on An Organic Conversation. With us in the studios, Paul Piscopo and Alain Grimont, the chef and the sous chef from Trace, a great new restaurant right here in the heart of San Francisco, where this show is produced, really leading the way in a new restaurant concept within a hotel.
Yeah, and you know, Paul, besides the W being fortunate to have you as their chef, you lucked out too because doing something with your hands, surfboards don't taste that good, right? And now you get to do something with your hands that
depends.
Tastes fantastic every single
so
day.
So said the shark. Yeah, it depends. It all depends.
So how do you source? You know, how do you guys go about sourcing food?
There's a few different ways. One of which is we hope we're lucky enough that someone we've either worked with before or somebody new walks in the back door and shows us something and says, wow, this is amazing. You need to try it. And we do. That's kind of one way. We also are lucky enough to have worked in the city long enough and have relationships with a lot of our vendors. And mm-hmm. they're geared towards giving us really great product. Mm-hmm. So
what is the concept? It was, you're really featuring local, sustainably farmed food within a certain region, or how does it work? What's your menu built on or built upon?
It's market-driven cuisine, and it's we were kind of given the reins to be able to source a lot of our product from who we would like to source from, as well as from the area all around San Francisco. I mean, we're lucky enough to have kind of an amazing produce market just surrounding us. So at one point we were, with the economy, we were definitely gearing towards shopping for value, and the company would like us set up contracts with certain vendors to say, this is who we're going to buy from, and this is what they're going to provide us
with.
Yeah,
because you're working within a corporation, and there are certain rules and regulations, and that, you know, working with small local farmers, it's a difficult thing to establish, perhaps.
Yes, it is, because it means that you maybe need to have a person for almost each item that you're using. So, you know, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense in some ways if you're a big company, but it does make a whole lot of sense if you want to do what we're doing here.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's very uncommon in the hotel kitchen industry, right? What you're trying to achieve, or what you've actually achieved, you're open and you're working and it's successful. That would be very uncommon that you'd just be buying from the back door and that you would be able to, you know, actually have a market-driven menu, right?
Unless if you're looking at, say, a hotel that has possibly a signature restaurant, which is in a way what we are. But, you know, I would say like the Ritz-Carlton would have the dining room and you have a chef that's just providing food for a specific restaurant. Then that maybe that's more common. But for us, we provide food for the whole hotel. We have banquet rooms. We have rooms. We have room service. We have bars. We have a cafe. So we have a lot of different venues. So to being allowed to do this while providing food for the entire hotel is a pretty great thing. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and you're changing from the inside out because, you know, and you're doing it within the W Hotel Group, one of the most progressive hotels or hotel corporations that is out there, and especially the W in San Francisco, you know, having beehives on the roofs and just doing things that are unusual that you would not find with larger companies. But I believe it must have been difficult to come to this place where you're, how many farmers are you sourcing from that are local?
Throughout the season, it could vary. I mean, I think it's probably in the range of like 10 to 20. Some of them, you know, we can make one phone call and get some of it from a bunch of different people, but it's still, you know where it's coming from. You know each of the farms that it's coming from. So, I mean, that's, again, where it's, you build the relationships. And when you need to branch away from that one contact to get another item, you have to then establish another vendor.
Alain, how much volume do you go through throughout the week? Like, you're the sous chef. What does that exactly mean? What are you in charge of?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm kind of the, you know, in the kitchen day in and day out, kind of, you know, making sure that all the prep's getting done, and then I'll typically run the line. So I'm kind of like the muscle in there. I'm just kind of in there making sure, you know, with the guys and you know, cooking, making sure that everything's being prepared to our standards. But as far as you know, quantity, I mean, obviously we've just kind of reopened a week ago, and it's been fairly busy. So I mean, you know, we'll go through, you know, cases and cases of fruit and vegetables, and you know it really depends on the week too. I mean, you know, depending on how business levels are kind of predicted to be, that'll change the how much we order and how much we don't. So
yeah, Paul.
Well, no, I mean, if the basically it's about $100,000 to $150,000 a month of product that we go through, and the majority of which is coming from local. So it's a pretty substantial number.
Yeah, and like in terms of eggs, I know a local egg producer that sells to you guys. You go through how many flats, which is, what, 48 eggs?
Oh, Lama, you probably get like, what, 6 or 8 cases at a shot?
Yeah.
So it's a, you know.
The volume is just mind-boggling, and sourcing that from really local farms around the region, it's definitely an obstacle that needs to be overcome.
I love that. Talk about putting money back into your local economy. My goodness, yes. When you're doing that kind of volume. Well, and you guys build such close relationships with all of the people that you work with. How does that help you select flavor? How do you really maximize and select flavor with the relationships you're building?
You know, for me, I would say most of the people that we buy from, you know, just as an example, we have a lady in Healdsburg that supplies us with tomatoes, and she's honest. She'll let us know they're not ready or they're not that great right now. You know, whether it's tomatoes, she grows some other products, and we'll take her word on that, and we'll just say, well, we're not going to put tomatoes on the menu right now, or we'll have to source them from a different, you know, place where maybe it's a little bit warmer,
further down south.
Exactly. Yeah. So I mean, that's something that I think when the, you know, the purveyors know that you're serious about quality and a certain standard, then they're gonna definitely make sure that they're not even going to bother to send you something unless it's up to your standards.
And you know what? As a produce guy, that to me is the sweetest music to my ears I've ever heard, that two chefs would be saying, we're just not going to have that on the menu. I mean, there has been so many countless times so that all of us have gone to a restaurant and saw a dish and said, oh my goodness, that's what I want. And then they've used a product that didn't necessarily have the flavor that the chefs wanted it to have, but they had to use it anyway. And then you just are so disappointed when you actually get that product. And when we ate the other night at the restaurant, I was just like, the flavors were just bursting in my mouth because of the choices that you'd made. I loved it.
But you can't taste everything that you source. So you or do you? I mean,
no, that's a, like, yeah, there's do you mean, have how many to? Tomatoes I mean, you, to a you, case. You can't taste them all.
You trust, no, but you do trust the farmer's word. And if they are honest and say they just need another week or two, fine. What about the rest? Where do you, when it comes to flavor and seasonality, how do you know which one is peaking right now? Are you constantly eating? I'm looking at two very lean, strong men, and you can't be eating all day to make sure at least, you know, you have one fig out of the entire basket to know these
we
are.
We burn a lot of calories, but yeah, I mean, exactly. You know, I do think though, just with experience too, I mean, we actually do taste a lot of stuff. I mean, when they're cutting figs for a salad or for whatever, if they're cutting melons for the fruit plates, I mean, we're going to go by and we're going to try a piece. And there's times where I'll say, you know what, that one's not sweet. Let's just put that away. We'll give it to you know, we'll use it for family meal at the end of the night or whatever. You know, another thing though, I mean, there's a lot of fruits. I mean, even with figs, I mean, it's, you can tell pretty much right away if a fig's underripe or if it's just really, really hard, or, you know, there is some other ways, you know, the smell of, you know, stone fruit or melons, you can tell right away if something's going to be nice and ripe. So,
and you have ways of bringing out that flavor, of course, right? If something is good but maybe not quite fully there are methods and
there's a different application for it.
That's right, and we want to talk about the applications more. Yes, Mark?
Just a quick comment, Helga. I just want you to know that if you're eating produce all the time, it's very low in calories. These guys could eat produce all day long and not gain any weight.
True. But you're not just sourcing produce. You're sourcing meats. And you're like, absolutely. I mean, the world of your menu is vast.
Well, I'm really interested, as chefs, when you guys get to taste something and know that the figs are going to be good today, then you have to come up with a menu or a recipe that
within
works with that fig, right? Like right then, like this is going to be good tomorrow. Okay, well, now, do you have a secret book that you draw from, or where do you get these recipes?
And we
want
to hear all that when we come back. You're listening to The Language of Flavor and the World of Flavor. With us in the studio is Paul Piscopo and Alain Grimaud, the head chef and sous chef of Trace, a new restaurant that just opened at the W Hotel in San Francisco. More on that when we come back here on An Organic Conversation. Stay tuned.
baby, you hardly even notice when I try to show you. Song is meant to keep you doing what you're supposed to. Waking up too early, maybe we could sleep. Make you banana pancakes, pretend like it's the weekend now.
My name is Earl Herrick, and I am the owner of Earl's Organic Produce, a San Francisco Bay Area distributor fully committed to organic produce. From the time one could find organic fruits and vegetables only in natural food stores to now, when schools and fine restaurants feature organic, we have been forging relationships with growers for over 20 years. If you want to offer the finest organic produce to your employees or customers, find us at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Frey Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Frey never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Frey organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Frey Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at freywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Sungevity, a company specializing in residential solar, is on a mission to bring solar to the mainstream market. Sungevity is changing the solar industry by making solar energy simple, efficient, and affordable for every homeowner. In most cases, Sungevity doesn't even need to visit your home to provide an estimate. Just plug in your address and we'll use satellite images and aerial photography to determine your home's solar potential. Go to Sungevity.com or call 866-SUN-4ALL to make going solar a reality today.
Trace, the new signature restaurant at the W San Francisco, is committed to creating an enriching and thoughtful culinary experience. By fusing the vibrant local personality of the Bay Area with a dedication to socially responsible food, Trace ensures all the ingredients are traceable back to their natural origins, locally sourced and sustainable. For reservations, visit trace-sf.com, trace-sf.com, or call 415-817-7836.
Over 25 years ago, my husband and I started a business around our passion for ginger. We called it The Ginger People. Today, you can find our products at natural food stores nationwide. We love ginger. It's what we do. And the more we learned about the amazing properties of ginger, the more we realized that everyone benefits from eating ginger every day. My name is Abby Leeson, and I am with The Ginger People. To learn more about our products, the goodness of ginger, and how it can improve your health, visit gingerpeople.com. That's gingerpeople.com.
And we're back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Bryan.
And we're talking about the world of flavor, the language of flavor today on an organic conversation. A world so rich and complex and subtle that it is actually endless. With us in the studio today, no less but Paul Piscopo and Alain Grimont, chef and sous chef at Trace, a brand new restaurant at the W Hotel in San Francisco that really breaks the mold of what hotel restaurants can do and can offer. And before we go into that interview again about the secrets of how to match ingredients with the secret book, here is Mark Mulcahy with What's in Season.
I almost can't wait to hear about that secret book. But we will talk about What's in Season. And today we're talking about the most commonly grown variety of pear in the world outside of Asia. And that is, depending on where you live, is either called a Williams pear, but most of us know it as a Bartlett. And that Bartlett pear, for those of you who aren't familiar with it, is that if you look at many paintings about pears, it's usually of Bartlett. It's that typical slender neck with a big bulbous bottom, yellow pear shape that all of us love to see. And the unique thing about Bartletts is that they actually show color when they're ripe, and most pears don't show that much color change when they ripen. So it's great raw. It's great in salads. It holds up its shape when it's baked and poached, which is very nice. And so as if you go out looking for Bartlett pears right now, what you want to do is you want to look for something. They can be green and they can be yellow, But if you like them crunchy and tart, then you want to eat them more green, and they're going to be very crunchy and tart. If you like a pear that's moist and mildly sweet, then you want to wait till it's just kind of yellowish green. But if you want something that is just really supery, syrupy, and juicy, and you want to wait till it just gets that golden color, and then it's just ready to eat, and the soft flesh will just melt in your mouth. Bartlett pears are fully ripe when they turn completely yellow, and they give off a really sweet aroma. And oh, what an aroma it is. Take a whiff of a Bartlett pear, and it can change your mood. You can't possibly be mad when you smell something that is so erotically beautiful as a Bartlett pear. The one thing you have to remember about Bartlett pears is you want to ripen them at room temperature, and when they get ripe, they are very delicate, so you want to handle them with care. And that's what's in season this week. Helga?
Thanks, Mark. Again, the language of flavor, the world of flavor. Today on An Organic Conversation, with us in the studio is Paul Piscopo and Alain Grimaud, the chef and the sous chef of Trace, a new restaurant at the W Hotel in San Francisco.
Yeah, so right before we went to break, we were talking about, is there a secret book or secret cards where you guys get your ideas? Because when you find out that, like we said, for example, the figs are great right now, you have, what, less than a week to come up with how you're going to incorporate in your menu? What do you do, Alain?
Honestly, it's definitely a team effort. And, you know, Chef Paul and I have been, we've worked together now for over a year. And we have a very similar style as far as how we approach food. I think we've worked, our experience kind of is very similar as far as the restaurants we've worked in our background. So a lot of it is just bouncing ideas back and forth. You know, hey, you know what, the figs, you know, would go great. You know, we're getting some great pork belly, you know, whatever it might be. And we'll balance ideas down, we'll write stuff down, and then we'll go out and test some stuff. I mean, and we're honest with each other. I mean, if I come up with something and something just doesn't seem like it's clicking, he'll let me know and say, I don't know, or he'll add to it and say, why don't we do this? So it's really a team effort, and that really leads to what we feel are just dishes that hit all the flavor aspects we're looking for, you know, whether it be, you know, savory, sweet, and, you know, maybe some acid on there. You know, it's just it's a team effort, and it also is just trying it, testing it, and being honest and saying, you know what, this needs something or it's not there yet, before it even, you know, ever goes on the menu. So
Paul, Chef Paul, you do you have that secret book somewhere? Or, I mean, you guys have years.
We all do, and it costs a lot of money. If you give us enough, we'll let you have one too.
It will be on An Organic Conversation Facebook.
Yes, exactly. There's no real secret book.
You guys have years and years of experience. You have years and years of training and culinary school and whatever, all the background, and yet I can't imagine that there's a box of figs coming in and you guys start cooking, and based on everything you know about figs and how to pair them and how to prepare them, and then create a meal out of it. Do you not carry, I mean, I'm just impressed, do you not carry like a big folder on figs and there are 50 top recipes that you know, or is this really all intuition and creativity at this? I want to be a chef. Bye, guys.
Yeah, well, I mean, you have your favorite things to do with them. I mean, no matter what, when they first come in, you know,
your signature.
I'll pick, I'll just pick all the really overripe ones because you get a mix in a case, and I'll right off the bat just make jam out of them just to have, because it's going to keep, it's going to be good. And it's fun to have for, you know, you get in there early enough in the morning, you slap it on a piece of grilled bread and you're a happy camper. So we all, like, each year, you know what's coming up, so you're kind of a little bit prepared. It's not like it's out of the blue. I mean, that's a great thing when somebody brings you something you've never seen before, but, you know, so you kind of look forward to it and look forward to being able to do something that maybe you did last year and maybe you're going to tweak a little bit. So as far as a secret book, it's a kind of it's an evolving document. It kind of lives and grows with you.
And it does physically live, or it's like the book you have in your brain and you know your 10 signature things you would love to always do with figs. And
it's a little of both. I mean, we keep accurate notes and exactly the amount of ingredients that go into everything. We change things slightly, and but it does. We do have some firm recipes because they work better, but we also have the more quirky ones.
That is so creative and wonderful. And we are talking about the flavor in the kitchen, bringing it to the field, and then from the field back into the kitchen. There's a woman that has been working with flavor and has been inspired by flavor most of her life, if not her entire life, who's now with us, Fran McManus. Fran, thanks for joining us on the show today.
Great to be here.
Great, 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 great to have you. You have made flavor really your life, or flavor has made you flavor's life. Connecting flavor to cultivation, preparation, and place is the slogan of, on your website, which is understandingflavor.com. Tell us about how did this start? Why did you pick flavor? Where did the idea come from? How did you get started?
Well, so I had been writing about food and agriculture for a while, and back in 1998, I just finished editing a secret book. No, it's actually a cookbook.
See?
Somebody's got one.
I knew it.
That was devoted to promoting local organic agriculture here in New Jersey. And we had chefs contribute recipes, chefs from New York, New Jersey, Philadelphia. But at the time, I thought of them as very much secondary. I was really focused on the essays and this idea that I was going to educate the public into to eating better. And that fall, I went to Europe as part of the Institute for Agriculture and Trade Policy's tour over there. There were six groups. Each of us went to a different country to look at the marketing programs for sustainable ag products. So I was in Switzerland for 7 days. There were 12 food activists crammed into a minivan with all of our luggage. And you can well imagine the discussions that we had about the evils of the corporate food world. So, you know, it was exhilarating for a little while, but it started to get kind of depressing and a little overwhelming. So after the 7 days, the six groups met. We all talked about what we'd learned. One of the last groups to get up was the group that went to France. And they talked about pleasure, flavor, place, culture, and I was floored. I mean, I listened to this and I thought, well, flavor is a much more compelling and positive way to talk to people about the source of their food and the substance than my sort of eat organic or die message that
people.
So, you know, out of that, and then I went on to edit a couple more regional cookbooks, one of which was in the Bay Area, and I paid a lot more attention to the recipes by the chefs, and I began to understand that, of course, chefs have great ways of maximizing the flavor that farmers have worked so hard to put into their ingredients. So understanding flavors really... The website's just my place to collect my thinking on that and my research on that, and you know, again, to talk to sort of explore this idea of what is influencing flavor.
So, wow, that was a great answer to the first question, there, Fran. Nice to have you on the show.
Thanks.
I can't wait to someday when we're traveling through Switzerland in a minivan, tasting food all over Europe. So we all know that flavor is influenced by many factors. Can you tell us about the anatomy of flavor and all the influences that may affect our choices when it, you know, when it comes to flavor, what we like, what we don't, why that is?
Well, okay, so the anatomy of flavor, that idea on the website was really about creating these kind of graphic, whimsical graphic representations that illustrate some of the agricultural factors, particularly, that are influencing the flavor of produce, and eventually I'll do some on meat and other foods. But they're not the definitive word because it's an ever-evolving subject. As you, Mark, well know, the flavor is so many things are influencing flavor. But it's a way to remind my readers that flavor varies from farm to farm, season to season, year to year. So when a farmer chooses a flavorful variety of a fruit or vegetable to grow, I mean, what they're really selecting there is the potential for flavor, mm-hmm. because there are going to be so many factors out in the field that are going to influence whether or not that potential is ever realized. And that starts with the quality of the genetics, with the quality of the seed itself, the soil type, and I believe, and ecologically minded farmers believe, that it has a lot to do with the biological health of the soil. But then there's also the timing of the planting, the climate, the weather, the maturity and the ripeness at harvest, how long it took to get from that field into the mouth of the eater or to the marketplace. So, and then of course I put information in there too about storage and use, because farmers know quite well that all their careful work can get undone by either a chef or a home cook that handles their product poorly or doesn't store it properly. So that, just from the agricultural perspective, there are a lot of things that are influencing the flavor of a product.
And I do want to repeat some of those, because it's just an impressive list. It's not like the farmer, as if the farmer existed, puts a seed in the soil as if the soil existed, and then harvests a crop. We are talking every single farm, and we have discussed this on the show many times, within 20 miles, you have a different profile of the farm, you have a slightly different microcosmos, you have a different you know, structure in the soil, maybe different soil types, different water availability. So everything you just said, the farming practices, the each individual season, the soil, the weather in that year, in that month, in, on that day, the harvest, how it was harvested and how it was stored afterward or treated, post-harvest handling, how it's often called, the seed, everything around the terroir of that place coming together in that moment through that farmer really creates an individual and unique experience for that moment, for that harvest, for that specific piece of produce. And while the onion might be perfect 10 yards further down, the broccoli that season might not, for whatever reasons. So there's really the world of flavor starts, it's impossible to say where it starts, but all this contributes to it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'm fascinated by farmers who save their own seed with the idea of over generations breeding specific varieties that really do well in that place. Because I think that has huge potential for flavor within local markets.
We're talking with Fran McManus, flavor goddess, who has a lifelong interest in flavor and is offering flavor seminars on her website and in her work, understandingflavor.com.
Fran, I loved on your website that visual representation of all of the different flavors we process in our brain and where we might process them in our brain. Like, where do you taste bitter, sour, moldy, icy, chilled, those kinds of things. I think that a lot of those things like woodsiness, we talk about that when we taste wine, but we don't talk about that when we taste food, and I don't understand why. I'm curious, can you describe the flavor fundamentals you use in your work and how it pertains to food?
Well, yes, the wine world has documented this process all the way through, you know, from agriculture all the way through tasting, much better than the food world. And I think it's just that we're lagging behind a little bit in the food world.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that representation of the brain isn't really specific to where we process it, but it does. There's so many, and the chefs know this so well, that when a customer walks into their restaurant, they're bringing in with them all kinds of emotional connections to food. So they may have developed those connections through childhood or the extent of their travel, or are they happy with the person that they're coming to have dinner with? I mean, all these things are going to influence how they're going to perceive the flavor of what's put in front of them. And then, of course, how that's presented, how that looks, that meal looks, what's the ambient aroma, and what's the aroma of the food itself? Not to put a lot of work on the chef's part here. The texture, of course, texture is a huge one. I had no idea of that until I went to a seminar on sensory evaluation, and we evaluated snack foods, and they had Twinkies, and I thought, oh, I used to like Twinkies when I was a kid. I couldn't get past the texture. The texture is so odd that it didn't matter what the flavor was.
Yeah, I know a couple of people who texture is the first thing. It's not flavor for them. They're like, if I don't like the mouthfeel, I can't eat this regardless of whether or not it tastes like ambrosia. It's like hugely important for them.
And Helga, yeah. I remember a few of our conversations we had about when you were growing up and the food you had in Germany, and you were, a lot of these things that Fran is talking about, the moment, the texture of something, all of those things, you know, instantly come flowing out of your mouth when you start remembering some of those things from your childhood.
Yes, there are foods that are so ingrained in my DNA that if I have them here or if I smell them, I have that scene of where it was presented. But I also remember a perfect pear somewhere on a dock at a lake in Victoria Island, British Columbia, where it was the moment, I was with the right person. You know, I had eaten a breakfast before, but it was 3 hours later, so I wasn't hungry, but I was present to it fully. The natural environment, smelling the skin, spending 2 minutes feeling it first, and then, so just, it's amazing if you really look at flavor, that it's not just the food, as Fran just said, but who you're with, what mind-body set you're in, a mood, what's the natural environment, where are you eating it, is it cut or not, are you biting into the apple or are you slicing it and letting it warm up, everything, right? Everything is part of it.
Well, I had an interesting experience around that exact subject recently where we were doing in-school tastings at two elementary schools here in Princeton. We brought chefs and we fed the entire school. Well, this, at this tasting, it was beets. And so the principal came up and we said, no, try a beet. And she said, no, I don't like beets. And we said, kids are watching. Just try the beet. she had this pained look on her face. It wasn't that she was going to be, she wasn't predisposed to like it. She took a bite and she just, she said, why did I think I didn't like beets? And of course, it was probably canned beets as a child. But what happened for her at that moment was this realization that she had carried around this prejudice her whole life that was based on something false in her childhood, but it also opened her eyes to the potential of that school garden, of the potential of in-school tastings. She was a so transformed true. Person.
Yes, wonderful. Fran, thank you so much for giving us your insights for a few minutes today on An Organic Conversation. Great to have you. And again, your work can be followed, understandingflavor.com on your website. Wonderful. Pleasure to have you on. Truly a pleasure. Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Fran McManus. Yes, the world of flavor and the language of flavor today on Inorganic Conversation. Sita, you had a comment?
Yeah, I think it was so interesting. She was talking about tasting at the school and how she said the kids are watching. The language of flavor is influenced by the people around you. So, and it was like what Alon was saying about how he learned to love it from his mother and the way she talked and the way she cooked for him. You can affect how people feel the food, how they enjoy the food.
Oh, my God. Everything is affected by the world around us, people, places, and the food itself. With us still in the studio is Paul Piscopo and Ellen Grimond, the chef and sous chef at Trace, a new W, new restaurant at the W here in San Francisco, where the show is produced. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hilberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Bryant.
And we'll take a super quick break, and then we go back into the secret book. Stay tuned.
Woke up cold one Tuesday. I'm looking tired and feeling quite sick. I felt like there was something missing in my day-to-day life. So I quickly opened the wardrobe, pulled out some jeans and a t-shirt that seemed clean, topped it off with...
Frye Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Frye never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Frye organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Frye Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines, without added sulfites, available at grocery stores and online at fryewine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Produce is ever-changing, seasons coming and going. At Earls Organic, we have been sourcing solely organic produce for over 20 years. Since 1988, Earls Organic Produce has been establishing strong relationships with growers and developing a deep understanding of the seasons, so you can offer the most delicious organic produce to your customers, staff, and clients year-round. For organic produce, visit Earls Organic Produce at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Sungevity, a company specializing in residential solar, is on a mission to bring solar to the mainstream market. Sungevity is changing the solar industry by making solar energy simple, efficient, and affordable for every homeowner. In most cases, Sungevity doesn't even need to visit your home to provide an estimate. Just plug in your address and we'll use satellite images and aerial photography to determine your home's solar potential. Go to sungevity.com or call 866-SUN-4ALL to make going solar a reality today.
Hi, my name is Abby Leeson, and I am the co-founder of The Ginger People. You can find our products in natural food stores near you, from delicious ginger drinks, sauces, spreads, ginger chews, baked goods, to skincare products. We love ginger. It's what we do. Add the benefits of ginger to your life, and you get that little kick, too. I am Abby Leeson, and I am with The Ginger People. For inspiration around ginger, go to gingerpeople.com. That's gingerpeople.com.
Trace, the new signature restaurant at the W San Francisco, is committed to creating an enriching and thoughtful culinary experience. By fusing the vibrant local personality of the Bay Area with a dedication to socially responsible food, Trace ensures all the ingredients are traceable back to their natural origins, locally sourced and sustainable. For reservations, visit trace-sf.com, trace-sf.com, or call 415-817-7836.
Thank you. And we are back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitrani Bryan.
And today we are diving full force into the language of flavor, a wonderful world of experiences of both taste and smell, a very vast world, as we heard, influenced by thousands of components. We just spoke with Fran McManus, a flavor expert, and you can follow her great work on understandingflavor.com on her website. And still with us in the studio is Paul Piscopo and Alain Grimont, the chef and sous chef of Trace, brand new restaurant at the W Hotel in San Francisco. And before we dive back into the world of cooking, here is Chef Sita with your holistic bite.
Thanks, Helga. Well, there are so many varieties of pears, and they come at different times in the season. You've got some that come in winter, some that come in summer. And like Mark was saying, what's peaking right now are Bartlett pears, which I think are so versatile. And I use Bartlett's a lot with my poached pears because I think that they have this really authentic pear flavor that comes through even when they're a little bit underripe, which is what you want because you need some firmness when you do poach a pear. They also have this almost intoxicating floral aroma, which is so good in savory dishes. I like to use it in a pear and brie phyllo triangle with some fresh thyme and honey that I serve as an appetizer at parties. It's got a lot of punch and a little bit of bite. And another way to enjoy these sweet, juicy Bartlett's is in a zucchini and pear terrine with aged balsamic vinegar. What I do is I really thinly slice the zucchini, toss it with some salt, and then let it sit in a colander to press for a while. While the salt pulls the moisture out of the zucchini and gets it really tender and crisp, then you can thinly slice your pears and also cut up some salty and soft goat's milk cheese, maybe something like a Mount Tam, which is a favorite on the West Coast from Cowgirl Creamery, or Brie or Camembert. And then rinse and dry your zucchini and make sure you dry it really, really well and create these layers of your terrine by beginning with the zucchini, topping it with some of the thinly sliced pears and a little bit of cheese. Drizzle a little bit of olive oil and salt and pepper, do another layer, finish it with some lightly dressed baby arugula, and then a drizzle of sweet aged balsamic vinegar. And I think that this is so simple and fresh and satisfying because it hits all of the flavors that your mouth wants. You get your salty, your sweet, your sour, your bitter, and a little bit of spiciness. And that's really what the mouth wants, is a little bit of everything. So crispness, juiciness, fattiness, really lush creaminess. It's the anti-salad, right? So pears are also really rich in pectin, which helps to reduce your cholesterol. And they're hyperallergenic, which means that if you are, for some reason, trying to determine if you have any food sensitivities, if you're on an elimination diet, pears are usually a safe bet. And they're also a great source of boron, which is a mineral that helps to reduce the loss of calcium in your bones. So it's an excellent snack for women who are concerned about bone loss. So the wonders never cease when you talk about the holistic properties of delicious food.
Thank you, Chef Sita. That was your holistic bite. Thank you, Sita. We are exploring the world of flavor today on An Organic Conversation, and it's a vast world. As we heard from Fran McManus and from our guests today, everything that creates the food is a world in itself. The seed, the pleasure, the terroir, farming practices, season, soil, harvest, post-harvest handling, and then how it is cooked, how it is prepared, how do you eat it, where you eat it, with whom you eat it. And with us in the studio still, Paul Piscopo and Alain Grimont. Paul, you were laughing when Fran, our previous call-in guest, talked about post-harvest handling. Why? Is that a big mistake that can be made? How's storage and handling affecting your work?
Well, you, the way you were talking about it, you were just going into all the millions of details that go into, you know, basically a piece of fruit or a vegetable. And, you know, people, hopefully all the people that we're working with are working so hard to bring to market a perfect product, and then we can still do something stupid and screw it up. You know, there's the known one where you have a ripe tomato and you put it in the refrigerator, or you serve something that's ripe and beautiful and it's too cold, so the flavor doesn't really come out. So there's a, like, again, there's a million different ways. So,
so cooking doesn't warm up the flavor of a room temperature food. I mean, of course, it does when you cook it, but if it was cooled before, there's something that you're saying bringing it up to room temperature does to the flavor profile? That
well,
would
it's
change
more,
the way it cooks?
No, not necessarily with the cooking as much as just in the eating. So if you're making a salad with something,
gotcha.
You don't want it straight out of the refrigerator. You want to let it warm up a bit.
Yes.
Outside of the greens, of course. Those are nice to have crisp and cool. But again, it's we're trying not to screw things up.
What other mistakes, Ellen, have you seen or made? No, seen is better.
Yeah.
By others. Like, what is a classic example of getting a perfect tomato and then putting it in the fridge?
What's
common?
Now in tomato season here in the Bay Area, I mean, on my days off, I'll go and get a farmer's market and I'll get some tomatoes for home. And, you know, maybe I'll go out and do a little jog or whatever. A lot of times I'll come back home and I'll see the tomatoes in the fridge and I'm just kind of like, what's going on? And my wife's like, ooh, they got to go in the fridge. They're going to go bad. And, it happens, but she's getting good at like.
Mark addresses what's in season, how to store things, because it's really amazing. You can ruin things by not storing it right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and you know, there's a story around my house and whatever family member is listening this week will know this for sure, is I bring home produce and I stage it on my counters and in bowls and in all different places. And I come back and it's all put in one bowl. And it's like, well, the reason that I didn't put those three pears in that bowl with those apples is because tomorrow they'll all be too ripe. And so then I take them out and put them on the counter and move them around. And then they get back and it's this whole dance, just like with the tomatoes at home with you. Just like, can we dance together, please, for the best flavor
of
this
Mark,
stuff.
Well, Mark, as our produce expert, can you tell the listeners how they can learn this information? I mean, the chefs and people who've been working for 30 years know not to put their apples and their pears in a bowl or their tomatoes in a refrigerator. But if you're just everybody, how do you learn? Where do you learn this?
You go to Facebook and again a conversation and look up What's in Season with Mark Mulcahy.
Okay, there you go. Well, and there are so many books, as Paul and Alon would say, there's so many books that are available just to give you basic tips on how to store produce or how to take care of your food. There's thousands of them out there. But most of us don't look in a book when we're going to pick out produce, right? And